Welcome back to Niners Sports Talk. I'm your host, Sam Perry. Joining me today is Blake Rose again to be the co-host. Blake, thanks for coming on again today.
Of course, happy to be here.
Yeah, finals week is here, but we got a lot in store to talk about. Charlotte's women's basketball team has named a new head coach. We also talked to former head coach Kara Consuega, talk about her time here and her decision to move on from the program. But let's just get right into it, starting with baseball. They've been through a little bit of a rough stretch recently. They dropped the series to UAB and then went on to lose to Carolina on the road on this past Tuesday. They're currently sitting at 20-25 on the season. Ultimately for them, I think the pitching staff has been a little bit of a letdown this season. They haven't really come up in the big moments to really establish a starting rotation. But, Blake, what have you seen from the team so far? What do you hope to see them improve on in this final little stretch of the season?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that I've seen watching the team so far through this kind of middle stretch of the season is I'm with you that the pitching needs to kind of get on the same page as the rest of the team. And then when you lose as many guys as they did, it's hard to find a rut in this first season. And so I think they're just going through some growing pains. And I think the only thing that we can ask for is for them to sort of figure it out in this last about a month, couple weeks, and just finish strong and potentially try to squeak in there in the conference playoffs.
Yeah, currently the team sits in third place. They're tied for that. Based on the way the tiebreakers work, they're technically in fifth place, but they're only two games ahead of the team sitting in ninth place. So this last stretch of nine conference games is going to be crucial because they could fall anywhere from basically the two seed all the way to out of the playoffs in general. So really big games coming up from them. Tonight they take on Rice starting at 6 p.m. for a three-game series. Rice is tied for sixth place, so that's going to be a big series for conference seeding as it comes down to it. And then next week, we talked to Coach Hibbs last week about when they started getting to play at Truist Field in Uptown where the Charlotte Knights play. Well, next week the team goes to Truist Field to take on the Clemson Tigers on May 7th on Tuesday. So a big game for them against the team they eliminated in the Clemson Regional last year. So really crucial matchup in Uptown next week just to see what this team is made of. If they can get into the tournament, see how they can play against some really tough competition. But then, looking at Charlotte softball, they also played UAB this past weekend. They completed the sweep on the road. They improved to 33-16 on the year. Team is just on fire. What have you seen from them, Blake, and what do you hope to see continue from them through this final weekend?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that I've seen is that those bats are red hot, and I feel like the team's overall pretty dialed in. Everybody's kind of running on the same page, and that's what you need, especially at this point in their season, is that you need everybody on the same page, and I think that that's what they're seeing. I think it's going to be tough to try to squeak in that first seed, especially being tied with Florida Atlantic, but I think that they've got the upper hand, especially if they can stay as dialed in as they've been and keep those bats just on fire like they've been these past couple months.
Yeah, tonight they take on North Texas for beginning a three-game series at 6 p.m. at home at the Sioux. They are tied with Florida Atlantic for first place. I don't know how the tiebreaker is going to work out if they both win the same amount of games this weekend, but could be big for them to win the American Athletic Conference in their first season in competition, riding that wave of momentum from winning Conference USA last year. But the really big story recently has been Ella Chansey. She has really stepped up back to the player we saw from her 2 years ago. Last year was a little down year for her. She won her third AAC Player of the Week award this week. She went 6-for-14 with 2 home runs and 8 RBIs on the weekend. Really big showing from her. She's really stepping up into that leadership role, along with Ariana Rohde, who's been on fire in her sophomore season. So really good things for that team. But then we got some other big news for tennis and golf. So, Blake, What are we seeing from tennis and golf with these award accolades right now?
So looking at golf, Connor Goh earned an invitation to the Chapel Hill Regional for men's golf, and that's big for both the program and for Connor himself. And I think that that's just a great opportunity for Charlotte to get their name out there, and also for Connor to kind of get his name out there as a threat in the fairway. And then switching to tennis, Coach Kyle Bailey was named AAC Coach of the Year for men's tennis, and the team is traveling to the Durham NCAA Regional to play and continue some of their elite play that they've been having this season.
Yeah, I talked about last week their massive win in the AAC Championship game, battling back from being down 0-3. But Coach Bailey impressed me about him winning Coach of the Year and winning the conference. I think I saw they didn't have any first-team players for the awards. So really impressive what he's done with that team as they go on to the NCAA Regionals. Now switching gears to men's basketball, some more transfer portal updates. Igor Milicic has officially made his decision on where he's going. He will be transferring to the Tennessee Volunteers. And then I know last week, I guess technically I lied to you, but information changes really quickly these days. Lukai Patterson has rescinded his commitment of returning for next season and has entered the transfer portal within the final 24 hours of the portal being open. We do not know where he is going, but a lot of signs are pointing to him going to his hometown school of Minnesota, who also recently lost one of their star guards. So Lukai has decided to move on from the program. Charlotte adds a new transfer player in Nika. I'm not even going to pretend to try and butcher his last name. I don't know how to say it, and I want to respect him by not butchering it. So, but he's going to be a stretch four for the team. He played 61 games for Louisiana Monroe. He had 33 starts in his 3 years there. One of his seasons, he battled some injuries, but he averaged 11 points, 5.2 rebounds, and 1.6 assists. He could really fill that void that Igor is leaving on the team as the stretch four. So, really big pickup for Coach Fern, and I'm happy to see that after Patterson announced he was leaving, those four players we've gotten in the portal so far, I didn't see any of them decommit from coming to us, and now that the portal is closed, I don't think we will be seeing that. Could be seeing some more additions to the people that are in the portal, but it looks like everyone that is bought into the system right now is going to be stuck here unless something drastic changes. Switching gears to women's basketball, last week we did not know who the head coach was going to be. That now has been announced is Tamika Reed coming out of, is it Jacksonville State? Jacksonville State, right? Or is it Jackson State?
It might be just Jackson State.
I can never remember.
No, Jackson, JSU?
It's Jacksonville State.
Just Jackson State.
You sure?
This was, let me go back.
It is Jackson State, yeah.
Yeah, it is just Jackson State because it's.
Okay.
Yeah, Jackson State University.
All right. Then looking at women's basketball, last week we did not know who was going to be leading the program. Now that has officially been announced. Mike Hill went out and got probably his best hire on paper, resume-wise, bringing in Tamika Reed from Jackson State. But Blake, what have you seen from her and her really impressive career so far?
Yeah, so Tamika Reed has a fantastic resume. It's pretty stacked, and it reads that she's won Coach of the Year four times. She's a five-time regular season champion, three-time Southwestern Athletic Conference tournament champion, three-time NCAA appearance, WNIT appearance, and on top of that, three-time national HBCU Coach of the Year. And so when you bring in a talent like this, it's easy to see that she's going to be serious about the program, that she's going to try to elevate the program. And by resume alone, it means that she's extremely qualified to take over Coach Kara's position. And I think going forward that I'm with you that this was a great addition by Mike Hill, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, when you lose a coach that's been there 13 years like Coach Consuergo was, she really built a strong culture here. So you got to really nail that next hire, and I think Mike Hill really did that bringing in Coach Reed. She seems really excited to be here. She's already said she's talking to try and bring in South Carolina as a potential opponent to play us, just help build the program. She doesn't want to shy away from the big schools, try and really build this program something elite. It's really excited to see what she does here. But we got some other women's basketball news. J.C. Busick, who had entered the portal for her graduate year, leaving open the door to return for Charlotte, has officially announced she's transferring to Belmont. She put in really good 4 years and was critical in that regular season championship and conference championship in 2022. So congratulations, JC, as she moves on with her career. But next up is our guest. We got former head coach Kara Consuega. She joins to talk about her 13 years at Charlotte, what it took for her to decide it was time to move on, and then she gives her farewell message to Niner Nation. So this is what she had to say.
Coach, first off, congratulations on the new job. What made you feel like this was the right time and this was the right position for you to move on to Marquette?
Well, I appreciate it. And, you know, I'll tell you, Sam, what I've told everybody through this process. My family and I have absolutely loved our time and our experience at Charlotte. And I always felt for me to leave there, it would have taken something really special. And that's why I stayed at Charlotte for so long. But, you know, Marquette is special to us, you know, because I worked here before. My husband is from here. His family is here. We have a huge group of friends and family that are still here. And so the opportunity to bring our family around or back to a place that's been really special and be around our family, it really was the best decision for us.
If you had to sum up your 13 years at Charlotte, how would you describe that time?
Oh, gosh, Sam, that's a tough question. I mean, it was incredible. Honestly, I mean, it wasn't always easy. I mean, certainly there's a lot of challenges we had to go through, from changing leagues three times and, you know, being collaborative in terms of building football. And, you know, there were a lot of challenges, but there was also, you know, so many, you know, just wonderful experience. You know, I really feel like Charlotte is a place that helped build me. You know, I took over as a 32-year-old head coach and still had just a lot of learning and growing to do. And Charlotte helped me do that. Both the administrators there, the players, the people. I mean, I have so many relationships that will forever be dear to me. So, you know, I think when I think of it, you know, when I think of it, you know, everything together, I'm just very fond of our time there. And I feel like it's a huge part of my roots.
When you got the job at Charlotte, how did that process go? How did you discover the job and decide that was where you wanted to plant some roots for a while?
Yeah, I had had an opportunity to do a few head coaching interviews and over, you know, maybe a year or two before I got the Charlotte job. And for whatever reason, some of those didn't work out. And when the Charlotte job opened, I had a very good mutual friend between Judy Rose and I. And, you know, he was able to, you know, get my name, I think, in the pool. And, you know, really, I mean, what do they say? The rest is history. So, you know, but what really attracted me at that time was, one, the program had been really successful under the previous coaches. I know women's basketball is important there. And that was important to me. And having opportunity at that time to work for Judy Rose, who was a woman pioneer in the business, I felt, you know, because I was so young, it was really good to have a mentor to help me as I step into such a important leadership position, to make sure, you know, I had somebody just kind of help me as I work through all of those things. So I think, you know, when you combine all of those three things, the opportunity to go to Charlotte was a no-brainer.
What do you feel like was the biggest lesson you learned as a head coach through your time at Charlotte?
Gosh, there's been so many, Sam. I just think maybe the biggest lesson in general is you have to evolve as a person. You know, I think about the coach and person I was when I started there to who I am today. And I'm just so different. I mean, my values are the same, what I believe in at my core. You know, those won't ever change, but how I do things, the way I go about, you know, leading a program, you know, I've just evolved so much. And I think that's ultimately what it's about. I mean, life is always changing. Certainly athletics right now is just incredibly different and will continue to evolve pretty quickly, I think, in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think as a leader, that's, we have to be the same way. And, you know, all the changes that happened during Charlotte while we were there, just caused me again to be really flexible and evolve. And I think because of that, I was able to stay there and be successful so long. And because of that, I'm you know, I've been able to get the opportunity here.
You built a really strong culture with your players and the program as a whole. What do you feel like is the key components to being able to build a strong culture with a basketball program?
I think the number one component is relationships and being genuine and truthful and true to who you are. And that's what I always try to do. You know, again, whether it's with a player, whether it's with colleagues, whether it's with, you know, so many of our friends, you know, donors who have become our friends in the community, you know, just building those relationships and being genuine about it. You know, for me, it's so much more about what people can do for me and more so about what I can do for them. I'm a servant, you know, I have a servant heart. That's what I love doing. And I think when you show that to people and you're genuine and you're truthful, they, you can feel it, you know, you can feel it. And I think, you know, we did a really good job of that at Charlotte with our players. And I think that's why they've had, you know, so many of them had a really great experiences there. And I think we've done that also with the university and the community.
Coach, a key part of the culture there was playing with heart. You let your players decide what that meant for them every year. But for you, what is your ideal meaning behind playing with heart?
Again, I think, you know, you always have to have a set of values that you can stand on, because life is hard, basketball is hard, athletics is hard, adversity is coming. You know, and certainly you have to have those values in good times too. Consistency is important, but so much of those get tested when things are tough. And, you know, play with heart is just who I am. When I was hired, I said, okay, who am I? What do I give to make people better? I do wear my heart on my sleeve. I am emotional. I am truthful. I do serve and care about others. I celebrate others. I give my very best effort to whomever has my time. I believe in accountability. I believe in being respectful to everybody. And I believe that you have to be really tough in life. And, you know, when you think about all those things, that's where play with heart came from. That's what it is. And thankfully our players really bought into that too. Our players, our staff, everybody involved in our program at Charlotte, really bought into that too. And I think that's what made it so special.
Coach, when you look at that 2022 season, winning the regular season championship, winning the tournament championship, was having that memory to look back on as you move on from Charlotte, wasn't having that mean to you?
Yeah. I mean, that year certainly is, so special to me. And I mean, I'll talk about it now and I'll still get emotional about it because of, you know, everything that we went through. I mean, we had a lot of really good teams at Charlotte and, you know, whatever, somebody got hurt late in the season or, you know, things happen. I mean, a lot of people, I think, don't understand this, but so much of success in athletics is also a lot of luck, like keeping kids healthy, not losing a player in the portal late, you know, things of those, that nature. And I felt like that happened to us so many times when we were right there. And so to have that year when really our luck changed and everything, you know, everything went right for us, combined with obviously outstanding players, outstanding staff. I mean, it was a whole package of us doing everything really well. And I think that's what made that so special. I think when you win and you win quickly, it's great. Sure. Everybody's excited about that. But when you have to go through hard things and you have to go through being so close and it just didn't work out, and then you finally break through that ceiling and find that success, there's no greater feeling than that. And I will never forget watching our players, you know, celebrate and cry when that happened. You know, that was the best part of it all. My staff as well, you know, some of my staff that had been with me a really long time, to see them, you know, just have so much gratitude of the journey. And to get through that and to be at the top. I mean, that's what made that year so special.
Are there any other favorite moments you want to highlight from your time at Charlotte?
Oh gosh. I mean, there's a lot of them for sure. Hard to narrow it down. You know, certainly so many great players and watching them go on and achieve things in life has been fabulous. But I think also just the memory, just seeing a lot of my coaching staff move on and grow up and have opportunities has been a huge highlight, from Tanisha Wright getting hired as the head coach of the Atlanta Dream, to Nicole Woods, you know, being hired as head coach at UNC Wilmington, to now Kate Wetmore getting the head job at Monmouth. I think, you know, I think that is as equally, you know, important to me as anything we did for our players, to see people who, you know, came and they believed in me and believed in my vision and allowed me to help mentor them, but also, you know, allow them to grow and impact our program, and to see them go on and be successful and get opportunities because of that. I think that's really special to me as well.
Coach's next question I ask everybody, but as a coach, is a two-parter for you. What does it mean to you to be a Charlotte 49er? And then as a coach, what do you hope it meant for your players to be a Charlotte 49er?
Sam, you hit me with tough questions today, man.
Yeah, gotta get them in.
Yeah, no, it's hard for me to put into words what it's been meant to be a Charlotte 49er. The place is so special. There's so many great people. Like I said, I mean, I wouldn't have left there if it wasn't for something else that I thought was really special. And so it is really hard for me to put into words, but what I can say is I will always have some green in my blood. I will always be cheering for that program from afar. And I will always consider myself a Niner, because I do feel like that place helped build me. And I'm so thankful for that. What was the second part?
What do you hope it meant for your players to be a Charlotte 49er?
Yeah. You know, I hope my players, you know, number one, you know, they walk away from there and say, I had an incredible experience. And if I had to choose it all over again, I would be a Charlotte 49er. That was always my goal, for every player that walked through that door. And I think we did that for the most part. I really do. And I think, you know, our players, being a Niner matters to them. You know, and when you see them, they're always throwing their picks up. You know, whether they played for me a year ago, 5 years ago, it's ingrained in them, but how special Charlotte is. And I do think there's a lot of pride in that program. And I'm excited for whomever takes that over and to be able to carry over that pride.
Coach, last question for you. What's your final message to Niner Nation?
My final message to Niner Nation is just thank you. Thank you for embracing me and my family for so long, through ups and downs. You know, obviously we weren't always perfect there, but our heart was always in the right place to take care of and enhance that program while we were there, to treat people right, to be a part of the community. And everybody in Niner Nation always embraced me and my family. And for that, we are so very thankful. Again, we will always bleed some green. We will always be Niners. And we will always consider Charlotte one of our homes.
Thank you so much, Coach, for doing this. That was a really busy time trying to build a program, so thank you.
Happy to do it for you, Sam. Thank you for all your support through the years. And always, I mean, every press conference, you're there. And that it always meant a lot to me. And I really appreciate you.
I really appreciate you for always giving me good answers, and they were always honest answers, which I always appreciate.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And having a better shoe game than me.
I got some new Kobes on today. I got the Venice Beaches.
You?
Yep.
Oh man. Yep. I feel like you were the only one that could beat me on the shoe game. So
I tried.
I know. Keep it up, my friend. All right.
Thanks,
Well, take
Coach.
care. I wish you the best.
Good luck this season.
Thank you.
Once again, that was Coach Kara Consuega joining the podcast, giving her farewells to Niner Nation. Now we're going to shift gears to professional sports. We didn't get to talk about those much last week, but Carolina Hurricanes have defeated the New York Islanders to advance in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They're going to be taking on the New York Rangers. Blake, what have you seen from the team in that first series, and what do you hope to see in this next series for the program team?
Yeah, so in this first series against the Islanders, I saw a couple of things from the team, and mainly the first really solid thing that I saw was that the goal scoring was on point. Most notably, the 2 goals in 9 seconds that happened twice during this series to put both games away. And when you have this level of scorers on an NHL team, it is really hard to defend. When you're trying to defend all three just pure scorers when they're coming down on an attack and nonetheless something like a power play, it is really difficult for opposing teams to defend against that, whether it's their defenders or whether it's their goalkeeper. It's just difficult to stop a moving force like that. And for one of the negative things that I saw would be some of the goalkeeping from Carolina's side, is that they let a couple of goals in that, you know, could have been avoided, that were easily avoided if there were right guys in the right spot. And so I think the biggest thing, one of the biggest takeaways on the offensive side was that the goal scoring is top notch. You can't really get much better. And then maybe some of the keeping needs to get a little bit tighter. And so I'm just hoping that in this next series against the Rangers that they'll be able to tighten some of that in. And then diving a little bit deeper into me talking about the goal scoring and some of the fiery sticks that we've seen from the Hurricanes, especially in this series, is that Seth Jarvis put up 7 points, and 3 of those were from goals. And so when you're looking at a guy like Seth Jarvis, who most people would write him off as maybe not the primary or, you know, premier goal scorer for the team, when you have guys that are stepping up into this role, when players like Aho or Svechnikov are still producing but maybe not producing at their all-star level, it's important that you have guys like Jarvi. And I'm going to say that I don't think we would be in as good of a position as we are right now if we did not have guys like Jarvis stepping up. Because if you look specifically at just Svechnikov and Sebastian Aho throughout this series, Svech only scored a goal and Sebastian Aho did score 2. Now, the difference between those two is that Aho, he really only had 1 assist. And so from a production standpoint, it's not what we've been seeing from him this whole season. Whereas Svech at least had those 4 assists, with some of those actually going to Seth Jarvis. And so at the end of the day, when you have your players like Aho and when you have your players like Svech, and they might not be producing in the same way that they've produced the whole season, having a guy like Seth Jarvis is a must on the team, and especially this late in the season. You've got other guys. I know Kuznetsov. He scored 2 goals on 2 assists, so good series for him. And then looking forward, just looking for some of the players to step up a little bit in this Rangers series. It's going to be a difficult series. It's going to be a difficult stretch of games. I think that both teams are going to go toe-to-toe. I mean, these are the top 2 teams in the Metro Division, and I think that both teams deserve to be here. And so when you're looking at the games going forward, really just making sure we tighten up some of that defense, because the Rangers can score goals. And the Rangers are also very good defensively, and so they're going to be tight, and they're coming into this game locked in after a win in their series. And so it's going to come down to who can defend the puck better, and it's really going to come down to who can get the puck in the back of the net, because both teams can do it on both ends of the floor, but I'd just like to see the Canes get a little bit tighter, especially in their defending. And that's about it for the Rangers versus Canes series coming up. So now we'll switch over to talking about professional football. We just had the NFL draft. Sam, what are some of the winning and losing draft picks that you've seen?
I'm biased. I'm going to talk about the Bills a little bit here. I think one of the good picks I saw was Colt Bishop out of Utah in the safety, going to the Bills in the second round. And the Bills have been known for having one of the best safety duos in the league with Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. Neither one of them are back this year. They got old, so time to move on. Cole Bishop's a really strong tackler to really fill in for that Poyer role. But then one of the better picks in the first round I saw was the Chicago Bears getting Rome Odunze at the 9th slot. Some thought he might overtake Marvin Harrison as the first wide receiver off the board. It's a really strong pick for the Chicago Bears. But When you look at the teams as a whole, Blake, what team do you think had the best draft class, or what's one of the winners in this draft?
So really looking at a lot of these teams, I feel like a lot of them did have some winners. I'm with you with that I think the Bears picks were pretty solid, and I think that they are a winning team. And it's hard to not be a winning draft team when you've got that first round pick from Carolina. So I'm with you. I think they won with that pick there. I think a team like Kansas City is also a winner as well, getting that wide receiver position that they pretty desperately needed. And then I am a little biased here as well. I think the Packers are kind of a sleeper winner. A lot of people, you know, don't have this at the top of their winners list, but I think that overall they filled positions that they needed, and I feel like they filled positions well. And so looking at this in a little bit more depth, the Packers add offensive lineman Jordan Morgan from Arizona with the first round number 25 pick. And so what this basically does is you see that this kind of replaces losing Bakhtiari. And if you look at this from just a purely positional standpoint, is that Bakhtiari was just getting older and dealing with some injuries, especially this season, but some pre-existing injuries that has plagued him almost his whole career. And also losing Aaron Rodgers, we know that him and Rodgers have a pretty deep connection, that it was pretty inevitable that Bakhtiari was going to leave. He has left his mark on the team. He has left his mark on the position. I know that there was tweet that he was tweeting at Morgan to represent the team and represent the position well. So I think filling Bakhtiari's position with a guy of Morgan's stature and his position, I think that was a good pick. I think it was, and that was really when you drop down to the 25 with how well the Packers played this season. I don't think anybody was really expecting that, but you've got a lot of guys at other positions that, you know, it kind of just made sense. Another pick from the Packers that I thought also helped them kind of develop that winning draft class, so to speak, or like a higher draft grade, if you will, was running back Marshawn Lloyd from USC. In the third round, the pick number 88. I thought this was good too, because if you look at our running back room, you've got Josh Jacobs, you've got AJ Dillon. Having another threat running the ball is extremely important. And the reason why I say that this is extremely important is because our wide receiver room has been and got banged up throughout this season, is that Christian Watson just never really reached his potential this season because of injuries. I know Romeo Doubs and Jaden Reed, they struggle with some injuries. And so when you've got injuries to the wide receivers, you kind of need to rely a little heavier on the running backs. And also, if you look that we lost our starting running back, Aaron Jones, to the Vikings. And so we did acquire Josh Jacobs, which is a great young addition to build up that running back room. But I also think that Marshawn Lloyd's going to be able to get it done. And I think that he will likely take over A.J. Dillon's position as the second string or the backup running back if he can prove himself in workouts and in preseason. And then as for a draft loser as a team, I think that the Falcons were the biggest, like, what are we doing here kind of pick from the draft. So the Falcons, they added quarterback Michael Penix from Washington with the first round eighth overall pick. And this is really questionable because earlier in especially the free agency period, the Falcons acquired Kirk Cousins on a $180 million year deal over 4 years. And so when you draft such a high caliber and high rated quarterback in the draft, but you've got a, you know, veteran, extremely effective, sought after quarterback in Kirk Cousins for 4 years on an ungodly amount of money for a guy who just tore his Achilles, you have to kind of ask a couple of questions here that, like, what are we doing? Another thing to note is that Michael Penix turns 24 years old this month in May, and he will be 28 when Kirk's deal finally ends. And so the biggest thing was that, yes, Kirk is hurt with that Achilles that I mentioned earlier, and so you might think that Penix would take over the starting quarterback position, but I'm not sure that that's where the Falcons are going. I'm thinking that the Falcons might be trying to do sort of like a kind of what the Packers have done this season in that, okay, let's let Penix kind of sit behind Kirk, provided that Kirk is healthy. Let's let him kind of learn. Let him develop. Let's let him, you know, learn a couple of tricks and really get adjusted to the roster before chucking him out into the, you know, deep end with no floaties on. So we'll see where it goes, and we'll see if they maybe can turn this draft loss, so to speak, into a draft win. I don't really see the vision here. And so that's why I've labeled them as a potential loser in the draft. But overall, there were, in my opinion, more winners in this draft than there were losers. But especially with the Packers, I think that was a win. And the Falcons, I shook my head at that choice.
Yeah, another team I thought had a really good draft, at least with their first two picks, was the Indianapolis Colts, getting Latu out of UCLA as an edge rusher. There were some health concerns there, but he's NFL-ready. Can make an immediate impact on that defense. And then second round, Adonai Mitchell out of Texas fell to them, basically gift drafted for them. He is projected to possibly go in the first round, falling to pick 20 of the second round. Apparently there's some character concerns there, but I don't know how valid those concerns are as why he dropped, but really strong pickup for that wide receiver room to pair with Michael Pittman. So Colts really added some good weapons on both sides of the ball for this season, but, you know, being local in Charlotte, we have to talk about the Panthers draft. They went into draft day without a first-round pick, but right before the draft was over, they made a trade with the Buffalo Bills to trade into the first round, moving up one slot to get that 32nd overall pick to draft Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina for their wide receiver room. I thought that was a really interesting move to trade up there because it was just one spot, but they really wanted that fifth-year option. But with the way wide receivers in the first round are kind of really hit or miss whether they end up working out or not, trading up, losing, moving back 59 spots later in the draft just to trade up for that fifth-year option and had to pay him a higher salary is kind of risky in my opinion. I don't think the benefits are really there, and because if he doesn't pan out, you really just gave up all that for nothing. But I thought it was a good move by the Bills trading back that one spot, because with our cap hit problems, moving out of the first round was really beneficial for their cap hit on their rookie wide receiver they ended up getting in Keon Coleman. And it's not like the Bills lost out on the player they wanted, because that's who Josh Allen told them he wanted them to take. Then the Panthers traded up again to get Jonathan Brooks out of Texas, running back, really talented player, only has 1 year of work in college, but he looked really impressive, but he is coming off a injury, so it'd be interesting to see how healthy he is and how much they rush him, but when he's fully healthy, I think he becomes the running back one in that running back room. They drafted addressed some other issues, they brought in a good linebacker from Kentucky who can just really tackle, and Trayvon Wallace. And then Sanders out of Texas, the tight end, could really boost a very a tight end room, at least a lot to be desired this past few years. And I think when you have a young quarterback like Bryce Young and you're trying to develop him, tight ends are rookie quarterbacks' best friends. They're the safety net to trade for, so I think that was a really good pickup for them there. Overall, I think the Panthers they made a lot of trades for the draft. Dan Morgan was really putting in the work as his first year GM. I don't know if he was just making trades just to make them and just see how some of these trades pan out. But if Brooks comes out healthy to start the year and is playing, that's a really good pickup in my opinion. Overall, I think the Panthers had a good draft, but I didn't really see a lot of really glaring losers in the draft besides maybe the Falcons with taking Penix, but I get what they're doing. But if you're going to have a guy sit, I don't think you draft a guy who is projected to go in the second round, eighth overall, and is that old to sit behind Kirk Cousins for that long, because he's not going to be young when he is ready to go. But drafts, you never know what you're going to get. It's going to be a wait and see moment. But then looking at our 49er players in the minor leagues, we're going to highlight two players this week. Donyay Evans made his professional debut this year in with the Lakeland Flying Tigers. This season so far, he's appeared in 9 games with a 1-0 record, with 1 hold and 2 saves, boasting a .96 ERA. Really impressive from him so far, only giving up 3 hits and 9.1 innings. Really strong performance for him with 10 strikeouts. He's been shining in his early career in professional baseball. And then going to flip to the hitter side, Aaron McKeithen, who is Charlotte's longest tenured hitting player in the minor leagues, is playing in Double-A with the Springfield Cardinals. He's played in 9 games as well. He's batting .414 with 3 RBIs, 1 homer, 1 triple, and a double, scoring 7 runs. Really strong performance from him because really bouncing back from some injuries he's faced over the years in the minors. Really strong performance from Aaron McKeithen. Those are our Niners in the Minors update of the week. If you like, the next week will be my last episode with Niner Sports Talk. Looks like next semester it'll be Blake Rose taking over the show. So, Blake, you got any messages you look to take over?
Yeah, so I'm excited to start the year and start, you know, being a consistent host, and I'm grateful for the opportunity, and I am excited to learn.
Yep, that's all we got for you next week. Look forward to next week when we have my final episode before graduation. Thank you.